What's up, After Buzzers? We are here with the Young Pope After Show. We're going to talk the finale. Does the Pope die or doesn't he? I don't know. We're going to find out. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, After Buzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Yes. It's a rockstar ending here.
I know.
Just standing tall at the end of the line. We made it.
Yes.
It was quite the road to travel.
It was. It's crazy. I love this song. I mean, I've loved this song before, but now I love it even more, and so I just want to listen to it one last time.
And for you kiddies out there who don't know, sampling Jimi Hendrix All Along the Watchtower.
Yes.
You just repeat the guitar before it went over.
Yes, I don't know if you can hear Al, but he said Jimi Hendrix, yes, along the watchtower.
So I was hiding in the back. I'm waiting to cut.
We got him. He's like Joel said, he's standing tall. But welcome, guys. We are here to talk The Young Pope finale.
Yes.
Episode 10, or the 10th episode. We are so excited to discuss everything The Young Pope. So welcome back. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jesse Zahner. You can find me all over social media at Afletcha.
All right, do we have the strobe lights going? Here's my big entrance. Everybody peep that, young people, like the intro to the show.
I liked it.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to work, but we all wore black to kind of simulate, you know, us and our run with the papacy. Here's to John Paul, if you don't see this. And I think it's going to be a really blessed night, everybody. It's a good one.
Thank you.
And I can do that because I was raised in the Catholic Church. Al G, Al Gregg. You can find me on Twitter at SoundClashCine. And you can follow me on Instagram at Al_Jamaica House Film.
Hey, guys. I'm Joel Monique. You can find me all over the internet at Joel Monique and every week at blackgirlnerds.com.
And we are in the live chat, guys. So chat with us tonight. We are so excited to speak about The Young Pope. Finale. It's just crazy.
Bring that beat back.
Seriously. I know. So we dressed kind of like the parts. Well, you know, I wanted to dress like Sister Mary, but I didn't have the shirt that she wears. You know,
I'm a virgin, but this is an old shirt.
Oh, and I don't have the nun outfit, so I wore all black. And now I almost feel like I'm coming to a funeral.
Oh, boy.
Well, especially after what happened.
Yeah, I could be coming to a funeral, but guess what? Jesus is my homeboy, and Jesus resurrects. just saying. You guys get this?
Okay, so let's start at the very beginning of the finale. And we're still talking about the Pope's love letters, and he basically said, you know, they're saying the world stopped to talk about love. So...
It's so romantic.
It is.
It's very sweet.
That was so sweet.
It's kind of the first time that we feel love in the show. Like, we see samples of it here and there. Voiello with his best friend.
Yes.
Voiello with Mary. Mm-hmm. We see, you know, bits of it here between the brothers. But there hasn't been a whole episode where you're like, I'm feeling a lot of love here. There's always tension. And it's really nice that at the top of this one, we got to see, you know, that it's not just the Pope, but the whole world.
Yes.
Yeah, this is the Pope's coming out party. He's had a long journey, a controversial journey, and, you know, he comes out, in my opinion, smelling like a rose. This episode, you know, kind of tidied things up with a neat bow. You know, not quite as, I guess, the pacing wasn't as rambunctious as episode 9. I think episode 9 tends to be, the penultimate episodes really tend to be kind of like the climax on HBO shows, and the 10th episode tends to be, you know, the fallout, the release, the denouement. But yeah, I was happy with it, and including with the cliffhanger at the end.
Yes. So we see the Pope. He has Sophia over, and she's talking about a tour she's going to have him take with the kids. First, I thought it was really interesting that he let her sit in his chair, because that's not something that we've seen yet before.
Yeah, this
what
is
does
a
that
new
mean?
Pope. I mean, he said, you know... No, that's later in this episode. Never mind. It's clear that he's putting away, like, these kind of childish reservations. This idea of what power was before has very definitively shifted for him. And now it's like, you know, kumbaya, more of a kumbaya pope. He's like, yeah, you sit where you want. I don't care. It's a chair.
And Joelle, I got to toot my own horn a little bit. Maybe both of you guys are kind of giving me a hard time. I was like, no, the Pope's going to get to know God.
He did.
He's going to grow. He's going to evolve.
Yeah.
And he kind of did. He had his own spiritual journey, just like, not just like the Pope, but like any man would. And I think that's what I got from him, is that he's still just a man.
Yeah. And you're right, because he has definitely changed from episode one to now. So he is going to go with the kids, and it's kind of a disaster because he starts out talking about how it was snowing and now it's raining, and the kids must have been bad because the rain basically means that Jesus is crying because they made him angry. And then the kids get upset. And then he's like, I thought, like, I was just kidding. You guys need to have a sense of humor.
Was he really kidding, though, when he said it? I thought he was just being a typical obnoxious son.
I feel like there's been a legitimate shift, but he cannot shake who he is. He still does not know how to communicate with people.
He's still a smart ass. Yeah.
Okay, I don't even know if it's a smart ass thing, other than, like, this is funny, right? Like, God is mad at you. Ha ha. Like, I really think he just has
there's no hope. God hates me.
He has no idea how to communicate with people.
Yeah, so it was really interesting. I thought it was a really funny part, because then when the kids are leaving the room to go get lunch, I guess, there's one little boy that walks by and sticks his tongue out, and the Pope sticks his tongue out at the little boy, too.
Classic. He's still immature, yeah, so he hasn't totally evolved, you know. But we like that, you know. He's still who he is. But one thing I like they did with the kid, I mean, tell me if you guys got this from it, but I got, like, that kid was like a chip off the old block. He almost looks like a young version of Lenny.
Yeah.
Especially when he's like, I don't want to compromise. Mm-hmm. I want it all.
Oh, right. Yeah. Absolutely. So that was interesting, because I also was wondering about that scene, because there we see the painting of the bearded woman again. Mm-hmm. And that came up several times this season. So I was wondering if that's all that it had to say. It's just, I don't want to settle.
No, possibly. Let me chime in on my theory, because we were talking about this, about the bearded woman. And yes, we found out that it's a woman. But I think to the average person, you're intentionally supposed to, you're going to think it's a man unless someone tells you it's a woman.
Yes.
And I think what the Pope experienced when he had that nosebleed, he literally had, I don't know, a mental and physical shock to the system.
Yeah.
Because it just basically gave him, like, brain freeze. You know, his whole hard drive crashed because he couldn't process it. He doesn't have any context for gender fluidity or, what would this picture be doing here unless he could finally wrap his mind around it. So I think that's kind of symbolic about how he's finally wrapping his mind around, you know, sexuality and homosexuality in the church, which I'm sure we'll get to later.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah. So outside of that, so we see with the kids, and then also we have this moment. It was very short, but the Pope has, like, this meeting with, like, all the other popes.
Yes.
Or a dream, right?
Yeah, or a dream, or he's getting high, or he's, this is, the Pope's really coming back, and...
Are these popes? Is that what I was...
That's what I took from it.
Yeah.
And I think these are high religious figures from across the world, which is why their outfits look different.
The Pope, like, international...
these are international heads of churches, which is why you have, like, a Greek Orthodox minister there. You have, like, from a bunch of different...
I thought they were all the different popes from beyond, because the Pope has different outfits that they wear. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was just all the popes from past...
You guys help us out in the chat.
Yeah, please help us, because that's what I took it as. And they tell him... You know, in the end, more than God, it's necessary to believe in yourself.
Mm.
And I thought that was a really funny moment, because then he responds, have you got something better? Because we don't know if he believes in God.
But what I took from that is you can't force somebody on a spiritual journey. And I really think this is what the show is trying to say, that, like, if you start on that road to God, either you'll find him or he'll find you.
Right.
This, you know, that just comes with, you know, a little bit of effort. Those steps, as they say, on faith, stepping out on faith. So I think Lenny stepped out on faith. But getting back to the meeting, you know, I don't think it was real. I thought it was surreal because the lighting was so dark and in black limbo. And I think that's what he needed to hear. Mm-hmm. Because I think his Achilles heel was, everybody's going to know I'm a fraud because I don't believe in God. It slips out. And I'm an orphan. You know what I mean? He has this inflated ego, but that's fueled by self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, like, I think that's what he needed to, like, when, you know, like, people are sometimes scared of their own power. Nelson Mandela said that. I'm paraphrasing, but basically, Lenny, no, you got the power, you got the intellect, you got the shrewdness, and really God got God has you, even if you don't believe in God, and we find out what happens with that. So you just need to believe in himself.
I think this image is definitely real. We've seen this duplicate, this, that style of imagery, the perfect positioning, the kind of oil painting look when they banished the religious deity, like human guy, a couple episodes ago. We've seen it a lot in important moments, especially important religious, like, turning points in Pope Pius's career. And I think that the information given to him was so great because he liked to pontificate. When he goes into, like, explaining himself, he really goes into explaining himself. These very long speeches. And he even says, you know, when they're like, oh, well, you know, love your, you know, it's more important to believe in yourself than God. And he says, can you do something better? And the guy's response is, you know, the banalities of things are sometimes the most important. He's like, our power is banal. It's a banal, like, thought just to have power. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's his biggest lesson at the end is, like, you don't have to have a giant flourish of words. You can be simple and they can feel simple. They don't have to feel, like, powerful or have deep meaning to have deep meaning.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So that's weird that we have, like, a split opinion. So if you know what was going on in that scene, was it real? Was it not real? I don't know. But speaking of, like, other surreal times that we weren't sure if it was real or not, but I'm pretty sure this time is real. Voiello, this episode, meets with his best friend, Girolamo, and they talk about Tonino.
That's what I was talking about, Tonino.
Yes. Yeah.
I still say they whacked Tonino.
Yes. Or,
after all you know, you still think that they whacked Tonino? I think that, look, we've seen, like, he believes in other saints. Like, he's no longer this guy who is power hungry or obsessed with protecting the church. He's letting it breathe a little bit.
Mm-hmm. But not back then. He was still hardcore.
But he was still the guy who wrote those love letters that said, I can't, like, touch another woman because I'm married to God. Like, we've never seen him stray from the path. People just don't like his methods.
Right.
But he's been very, like, you know, religious. And I really think he's, like, hiding out in a conclave somewhere.
Let's talk about the possibilities, because the two things that were mentioned, you know, about they were, like, joking about, we'll throw him in some quicksand, you know, with, like, cement feet.
Yeah.
And the other thing that was alluded to, though, is that, you know, oh, like, he's probably, you know, at some, you know, distant, you know, woodside, church or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are the one or two things. He's hiding out. They banished him. They told him to hide out.
Right.
Maybe he'll pop back up later if there's a season two. There's a lot of things, you know.
Yeah. So where do you think he is, Joel?
Some, like, probably, like, up in a mountain where remote that you cannot
but
get down
from, like,
easily.
Okay, so do you think they, like, took him there?
I think they did what Pope always does, which is strongly suggest that you go to this place.
Oh, maybe
or else
to Alaska.
Face punishment. Yeah. Like,
that's where they bury you, you know, to get rid of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't ever really punish anyone. He's like, look, you should probably go over here because that's your last option.
Yeah, and I don't know. I thought for sure he was dead, and I thought that's why Voiello was not telling.
I think it's cool that that's a mystery, though.
It is.
Yeah.
So, and that's something that the writer keeps saying. If you watch the little clips that he does afterwards, he, like, leaves all this to mystery, but it's like, I don't want it to be a mystery. I want to know what is going on. So it's like,
but
where
faith
is this
mysterious
guy?
So I totally understand why you'd want to keep that tone throughout.
I know, but I want to know. So one thing that I thought was really interesting about this episode also is they talk about the Pope becoming a saint, and everybody sees you as a saint. And he has these three miracles that we know of with his friend's mom, with Esther, with Sister Antonia. And one thing is, all the miracles were centered around women. And I do, like, feel that, like, this show has, like, a weird tone or a weird thing about women. Just, like, I don't know. So I thought that was interesting.
Elaborate on it. What do you think?
I don't know. It's just, like, you know, the Pope was, you know, he was his, like, badass self, kind of an asshole at the beginning, and he met Esther, and, like, that kind of changed him, I feel like, a little bit.
Okay, yeah, definitely.
And, like, Sophia changes him, and, like, he has
his girlfriend.
You see
the thing with his mom, where it's, like, he clearly wants to find both of his parents, but there's this fixation on his mother, there's this fixation on Mary, there's the nuns, where we have all of these, like, very long shots of the nuns just kind of, like, hanging out, and I honestly think that's just a call for feminine energy, of, like, this idea that we're run by a bunch of men, like, they are making all the decisions, and yet what they crave most is this, like, gentle,
feminine energy. You guys said I went too far, or somebody said I went too far last time. I was like, there's this whole Oedipal sexual thing.
Yeah.
But there is. If you go back and look at the scene where Sister Mary has her arms around Andrew, and she's kind of consoling him, like, we have to do this to Pope. She puts her arms around him. She's got the cigarette. By the way, cigarettes are always phallic symbols. I'm just saying. You know, just like lipstick in the bathroom, you know, with Sophia, that's a phallic symbol. But those images you can take research frame for frame. Go back and look at The Graduate, you know, mm-hmm. Dustin Hoffman, you know, with Anne Bancroft, young man, older woman. And it doesn't have to be have sex intercourse type of thing, but like you said, feminine energy is there. Mm-hmm. And Sister Mary knows how to use it. Obviously, Sophia knows how to use it. And the Pope is a heterosexual as long as he doesn't, you know, act lustfully upon it. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, female sexual energy is good. It's positive. It's, you know, from God.
I don't even know if it's sexualized energy, though. It's always a very calming presence. Like, when he's around Esther, he's always doing these, like, very deep breaths where he's like, okay, and now I'm relaxed, and he feels more settled, and he's able to open up a little bit more. The same thing with all of the cardinals watching the nuns play. It's not, they don't ever seem to me to be, like, have lusty feelings. It's more of like...
But see, I'm talking natural sex. It doesn't necessarily have to be lusty, like when Sister Mary, I'm sorry to cut you off, but when she's playing basketball and she shows off her knees. That's intentionally made, you know, to have a kind of sexual vibe. Now, I don't want to see with you, but I see you as a sexual being. Mm-hmm. I see you as a feminine woman, a sexual being. Otherwise, they won't show his mom. They wouldn't show his mom with their top off all of those times. And again, I'll take it back to the cigarette when she's hugging him, or you weren't here when we talked about the scene where Sophia sneaks into his bathroom, right. Puts on red lipstick, you know, while he's checking out her ass. There's a lot of shit going on in there, you know? And it doesn't have to be, again, it doesn't have to be something that you act on, but it's something that men appreciate, feminine energy. And you just say, well, it's just feminine. I say, no, but as being a man, part of that feminine energy is sexual. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just normal.
Mm-hmm. Well, let us know what you think. We are still split on this. And I'm on the other side, like, I have no idea what's going on and why, like, all this emphasis on women and, like, why the miracles around the women. So, interesting. So, let's talk about Tommaso, because I know you guys don't like Tommaso, or do you?
My feelings changed about Tommaso in the last three episodes. Whereas before I felt like he was kind of, you know, snitchy and impatient.
No, biatch.
Now you can see, especially now that the Pope has more respect for him. Mm-hmm. Like, what, like, this is his true confessor. Like, this whole time he's like, I can confess to no one. Blah, blah, blah. But it's true. It's like Tommaso has become kind of your best friend and... You know, you owe him a lot. He's been there for you in times when you felt you couldn't talk to anyone else. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of an invaluable person. So I gained a lot of respect for Tommaso. He waited until he got what was his. He didn't freak out. So, yeah, respect to Tommaso. He came up. Yeah.
And I think that's emblematic of all the relationships they have going in their surrogate family. You have to forgive people for their sins, you know. And everybody has kind of, like, had these mini betrayals. We talked about Gutierrez betraying the Pope. And the Pope felt like Don Tommaso betrayed him. Obviously, Voyello, super big betrayal.
Yeah.
But just like the little dysfunctional family, it's dysfunctional, but it's still a family.
Right. So I thought that moment was so sweet where he becomes a cardinal. And then the Pope is hugging him at the ceremony. He's crying. But then he looks at the guy that he sent away to Alaska, and he smiles at him.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you guys take it as... Because then we see later a moment between the two where they talk about his hands. Because he says your hands, like, look like the hands of Christ. And he has, like, some type of, like, rheumatitis. Is that what it is?
Yeah, well, and because of the cold. Because he's been preaching.
Right.
And,
he
can't put balm on his hands because he's allergic. So,
right.
But, and we saw him out there without gloves. So, we know, like, his hands... But I honestly feel like that's the sacrifice he had to make. Like, you messed up, and now you went through on the sacrificial journey, and that's why he made the comparison to Christ's hands.
It's and like, he repented, and now he's, like, being restored, right? He's not the one in Alaska anymore. We'll find out about that.
Yeah.
He's coming back.
Yeah, so that was interesting. I liked that moment. I thought that was sweet. So, aside, let's talk about Sister Mary, because some of the major characters have big things happen to them this episode. So, the Pope at one point says the child Pope has become a man.
Mm.
And so he's sending Sister Mary to Africa. So, there's all this stuff that's going on. Like, she, you know, he's sending her there to be with the kids. She wants to be with the kids. He knows that she was an orphan. She's like, how do you know this? And then also, like, with her and Voyello when they're leaving. Like, what did you guys think about all the stuff that's going on?
So he's cynically, he's also, like, breaking them apart?
So I don't think that he's purposely breaking them apart, but he knew because didn't he say something like, make sure you tell Voyello goodbye or something?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great he knows everything because he knew she was an orphan. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked Sister Mary's ending here. Like, it was really nice. Because eventually, you know, a child is supposed to separate from their mother. This is clearly his mother figure. He acknowledged who his father figure was a couple episodes ago. So it was nice for him to do. And then to send her back to where, like, she could do the most good. Mm-hmm. And she's still in a position of power.
Right.
But she's, you know, in a place that makes her happy. You know, mm-hmm. she's stressed at the Vatican. There's a lot of drama here. So, yeah, I didn't see anything malicious in separating the two of them. I honestly think it's like, Voyello can't go to Africa. He has a job here.
Right.
So you can say goodbye, but that's where we need you.
And more importantly, it was the, if you, could you think of a better job for her?
No.
You know, it was like tailor-made to fit her.
Yes.
You know, again, her having been an orphan, and contrast her to, who was the previous nun over that, over those love
Sister
villages?
Sister Antonia.
Yeah, Sister Antonia, who's kind of devoid of compassion, fake compassion. And obviously Sister Mary is bringing like that real compassion, that real like, love that's from God.
Right, and he knows that. Mm. And we see her later, and she looks so happy. And she wants to create more of these, like, cities of goodness just for the children. And the Pope thinks that's a great idea, so he's totally on board with it. And one of the moments that I thought was really special in this episode with Sister Mary was the part where she says, "Can I call you Lenny again?"
Mm,
and he says, "If I can call you Ma." And she says, "Yes." So I thought that was
special.
So sweet between those two. What did you guys think of that?
I was glad to see them back together, especially after Lenny's passing. I feel like losing Lenny was a thing Pius had to go through in order to become an adult.
You mean George Cromwell's character?
I'm sorry?
You mean not Lenny. George Cromwell's character? Lenny didn't pass.
Spencer.
His brother.
Oh, Andrew.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. I think losing Andrew is the thing he had to go through. And so to... come out and have them together and have that sense of familial bond. It's nice.
Yes. And actually, we have somebody in the chat, Rock and Roland, said, "I think women are the biggest mysteries to the Pope."
Mm.
He longs for the connection with a woman because he has lost his mother at such a young age.
Nice.
So that's interesting, too.
And honestly, I think he equates his mother with God. That's where you found stillness. Mm-hmm. You know, meditating in the... by the waterfall in the little retreat area, him and his dad and his mom, and like they found peace there.
Right. And then actually, so to top off everything that's going on with Sister Mary, she starts leaving and he's like physically like heartbroken. It looks like he's like having chest pains and he's like, "It's okay, it's nothing, it'll pass.
Yeah, everybody's like, "Oh, it's just psychosomatic because she's leaving,"
right,
or whatever. But no, they established that. Remember the other time he passed out in Esther's arms earlier in the season?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, again, like...
So, what do you think that all of that is connected?
I think it's foreshadowing.
Like, physically, or is that something mentally?
Okay. Like, or he could be, like Tony Soprano. He could be passing out and having panic attacks. Who knows?
Yeah.
But it's something they established.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I didn't even think about that with Esther. What do you think, Joel? Do you think that is?
I kind of read it as a lot of times when people have, like, they're sainted or whatever, and they have, you know, godlike connections or these high moments of spirituality. Oftentimes, there's a physical repercussion for mm-hmm. that, where either they're sick or they pass out or, like, you know, they start dancing because they catch the Holy Spirit. There's like there's a physical reaction to being that close to God, and so that's kind of how I took it. There are always these moments where he's feeling, you know, spiritually high.
Yes. Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree.
And I don't know if we want to get too ahead of ourselves on the ending, but like that's taking that beat where he passes out after giving his speech, where, like his coming out party, where everybody finally sees him and he's near death, probably in that limbo, you know, that between life and death,
mm-hmm.
and that's where he sees like the greatest miracle.
Yes.
But whenever you want to go there.
we'll get there at the end, because I do want to say that I have a lot to say about that. So we see Gutierrez again this episode. I really have grown to love Gutierrez over the season because he's always been so great for the Pope, but everybody was always against the Pope, so I was always like watching my back with him.
Yeah.
But it was so good to find out like there are good people in the Vatican. So his deal is they kind of want him to take over Sister Mary's spot. Is that right? Like he's going to be the secretary to the Pope,
mm-hmm.
and he won't accept the job because he finally tells us that he's a homosexual, which I think like
we kind of had
an idea like in that one moment where they're in the garden, he gets up and like looks really weird the other way.
And also when we were talking about when he was in New York
with Freddie,
the guy who ran the liquor store, we thought we saw a moment there.
Yes,
it's for sure a moment.
Yes,
unmistakable.
Yes. So he tells him, I'm not going to accept it. I'm a homosexual. It's a huge mistake. You can't compare us to pedophiles. And he says, you know, the secretary, you offer advice. And he says, but I just don't want to give my advice. I want you to accept it. Mm. And he says, do you think... The Pope says, do you think I didn't already accept it? Did you think that I didn't know that you were gay? Mm. And then he says, do you think...
Because he knows everything.
Yeah, did you think that I didn't know that you were molested?
Wow.
Yeah. Which I know we talked about, like, Gutierrez, and we weren't sure about him, and there were people that commented to us about different things, and we were curious about, like, the stuffed animals on his bed, and why was he sent to take care of this case in the United States?
And thank God, though, he wasn't molesting anybody. Oh, those were just kind of like... Probably him stunted, you know, in his childhood from, you know, when they had that trauma, perhaps.
Yes. But at the same time, what do you think? Because, like, so this is a guy who's been molested as a child, who's going to get a child molester, but then also, like, kind of has a part in having Freddie kind of, like, set Kurtwell up.
Yeah. Well, before we go back to that, to the yes. setup, because, I mean, it's a tough job, but, yeah, maybe it needed to get done. I don't know. I don't want... Think about it. Yeah. But,
if we bring it up, we should address it. And I just feel like he didn't set... I read that situation as, like, Freddie, you need to talk. Like, if you tell me what happened, then okay. I can make it better. And Freddie's like, I can't talk. I'm going to get in trouble. But there's a camera right there, and we can use that.
So you're
I honestly
saying,
think Freddie took it upon himself.
This was already going on with Freddie, so they're like, let's just put a camera and catch him. Whereas, like, I guess I was seeing it more as, like, you need to approach this guy and make this happen. And we're going to catch it on camera.
I don't think he would ask anyone to sacrifice themselves
okay.
that way, especially when you could
God
give
not.
A
Thank
verbal,
you for clearing
like,
that up. I'm going to believe that to be true from here on out. At the same time, though, like, how are you just going to let somebody continue the abuse of somebody else?
Well, let me get to that, okay? I think the show held up Gutierrez and, what's the name of the guy who molested?
Kurtwell.
Mm-hmm. As two opposite poles.
Mm. Yes.
Gutierrez was a man who was molested but didn't have to, you know, pass on the disease.
Yes.
And we know most child molesters have been molested. And at that point when he's talking about how he was molested mm-hmm. when he was 12 years old, like, you really do feel compassion
oh,
for
my
him.
God, I know.
I don't feel compassion for him now as an adult that he carried that
Kurtwell,
out.
Kurtwell, did you believe that story?
Oh,
yeah.
Why? You didn't
oh,
believe
no.
it?
Not
well, you
were
here last week. He was talking about being molested last week.
Oh,
I
so
didn't read
you
that conversation as being last week he was talking about being thrown out of his house.
No,
last
but this
week
caress
he,
from the
yeah,
this caress
I
from the guy.
He says he felt caressed for his
jacket.
Parents and a bunch of other people.
No,
here's where I'll disagree.
The landlord caressed them. He's like transmuting this caress.
He said with a word. He said with a word. I felt like he caressed. And look at the changes in story. Originally the story was me and my sister were home and we were both sick.
Yeah.
And now it's, oh, I was just home. Like, it's the same story, and he switched these little details. And the fact that then, at the end of this sob story that he's created, where he's essentially put himself in his abuser's shoes and retold their story, at the end of that, when they're like, okay, but we care about all children, there is not even the slightest remorse. Like, there's no, like, breakdown. There's no sense of confessional.
Right.
It's performance. And then, yeah, I did that.
I'm not even getting to, like, the moral aspect of it. We know, like, child abuse is wrong, but I'm telling us what the filmmaker showed. Like, and the whole thing, like, in the coming over and like the rain and wet clothes and all
yeah.
that. Again, this is, I'm big into subtext, so there's a lot of subtext. But we can agree to disagree on whether he was molested
yeah.
or not.
And
personally, I thought he had to, even if it's not at that point. He was molested.
No, actually, I totally thought it was true too. Like, I thought like they weren't going to come out with it, so I was surprised that they did come out with it
That's
the final
the filmmaker
episode.
Showing you. I don't think it's like up to debate. This is what the
yeah,
this is what the filmmaker is saying.
In the ninth episode, I did believe that he was molested.
Mm. Whether it was the story,
and
or
I don't
whatever.
Know. So tell us what you think. Was that a lie? Was he actually molested? You know, if you guys are commenting on this, please let us know what you think.
Yeah, I just think we're thinking too little.
I never,
like that it had to be then. You
yeah,
know?
I never thought about it being a performance, because the thing with individuals who commit crimes, and more so with like sociopaths, and I don't know if he's a sociopath because I just don't know much about him, but like the way that they tell stories, like, they're not remorseful for things. And I'm not saying he's a sociopath because I just don't know much about him, but like Jeffrey Dahmer would tell stories about like murders that he committed, and he was mm-hmm. so just like it's weird because he was
devoid
such
of emotion.
Yeah, he was
yeah.
such a charming person. I know that's weird to say, but
no,
like,
but it's factual.
But he was so just like,
but this guy wouldn't
no
even
emotion.
Recount it. Like, he's not even like coming close to addressing like his sins or anything. And the fact that his story, like,
But can you imagine that? Sitting here and telling the Pope blow by blow, yeah, I took this little kid in the closet, I pulled down my pants. I don't think anybody wanted to hear the blow by blow.
I'm not asking for the blow by blow, but I'm talking about like... like a complete acceptance of what you've done. Because he couldn't even say, like, I did. He's like, I behaved like this other person.
Yes.
And the idea that, okay, I watched the episodes 9 and 10 back to back.
Yeah.
The wording for the accounts are so close. It's a rehearsed story.
Yeah.
It's a well rehearsed performance of a story, which is why I don't believe him.
Well, nobody doubts that he put on a performance, whether you're taking something that happened that was truth or whatever. Yeah, we know he's ready to cry his eyes out as a manipulation. Right. But I think even more so, once we get past that, whether he was molested at that point in the story or was molested another time, I think what the show wants to tell you is that he was molested and there's two ways to go. You can be Gutierrez and not carry on the sin, or you can be like him and you can perpetuate it. And now, skipping to the end, as far as I was gonna make a statement just on the whole molestation thing. The one thing I had a problem with was that he didn't go to jail, but then I had to, keeping true to the story, is that the church had fought all those lawsuits, they paid off all the victims, and there was the one brother who didn't want to sue him.
Yes.
So I was just like, that's getting off, because he's going all the way to Alaska. There'll be kids in Alaska, knows, but it was the best thing they could do, I guess, short of arresting him, because they can't now.
So let me ask you this, because I was taking all of that as being real. So Joel, you probably don't have the same thoughts as I do, but like, it's so hard when you hear that story, because like, I was honestly like, I felt so bad for him. I'm like, that doesn't make what you did right, but I can still like empathize, like, that must have been terrible.
Yeah.
But so that's what I was thinking. I mean, what did you think, Al? You were probably like, the hell with him, he's lying.
I mean, children who've survived, and like, I don't know, I get very iffy about the sentiment that, you know, people who were abused then go on to perpetuate that. There are cases of that.
That's a fact.
Right, but not the high percentage that television would lead you to believe.
Mm-hmm. Also, television, okay, it's propaganda.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's propaganda. I'm saying it doesn't happen as often as we see. And, like, there are not as many sociopaths or serial killers as television would lead us to believe either.
Oh, for sure.
But because, you know, we're able to see the difference in serial killers from real life, people can make the distinction.
Right.
I think that, like... yeah, no, you're right. I don't feel bad for the guy. I don't believe his story. And I'm leery of saying that just because he assaulted children that he was also attacked.
Yes.
And you have the right to your opinion and interpretation of the scene, but I'm just telling you what the filmmaker is saying. You know, he's holding up these two poles.
Right,
but
I already told you the words. Like, where, just because, I don't see the comparisons outside of that between these two guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, visually.
One was molested. One was not. One is totally compassionate. One is totally ruthless. Mm-hmm. And the one who was the compassionate... was sent to get the one who was ruthless. I mean, it's like black and white. It's, to me, mm-hmm. it's like that he set them up as like clear antagonists. And that was when everything came to a head.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about it that way, because I didn't even think about it that way. So, you know, moving along with him, we get to the point where, you know, the Pope has like this punishment that he does, where he goes over to the Globe and says, hey, pick out where you want to go. And they'll say, oh, I want to go to San Francisco or New York. So they said, you know what, we're going to send you back to the United States. Where do you want to go? And he's like, I want to go home. I want to go back to New York. Thank you, you know. Kurtwell, thinking that the Pope has had mercy on him, so he says, fine, I have one last request. Just point to where you want to go. Point to where New York is on the map. Now, when that happened and he pointed down, and of course it was Alaska again, did the Pope make him do that? Like, you know what I mean? Like, did his super
God, I'll let you weigh in, but you know what I think happened.
Or did he just really...
I'm actually with you on this one. I think it was like... it's like his hand was so shaky. He's nowhere near New York.
Yeah.
We don't see Pope Pius move at all. It really feels like that's where we send our sinners.
Yeah.
But more
sorry, that small Alaskan town. You're just going to get all of our awful people.
I know that's
And
sucks.
Reflecting on, again, we were talking about last week about the Pope's power. Like, even though he's a flawed vessel, God uses him as a vessel to heal people. So when he made that prayer, and basically, what's the nun again who died? He killed.
Oh, Antonia.
Or he asked God to, like, you know, remove this woman.
And
God's choice, let's say, was for her to die. I think you can look at it the same way. Like, God operates in mysterious ways. Some people say, oh, that was God when I got a parking spot. But I looked at it as that was God, Holy Spirit, just that his finger landed on, you know, Alaska.
Yeah.
I think Lenny knew his finger was going to land where it was supposed to land.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of levels of the show. That's why I like it.
I know.
It.
It's crazy. Well, I just want to say what's up to Andrew. We have some people in the live chat. So,
hey.
So, aside from that, we see Pope Pius talk about a little bit more about his parents. Now, the guy who he's talking about this with, it's the guy from Guatemala, the cardinal.
Mm.
Do you know? Does anybody know his name?
I can't recall, there's but oh my gosh, the most charming man.
Yes. Yeah, I really like him, too. So, I don't know, you know, like, he is talking about Juana, and we see Juana come back several times this episode, here and there, and, you know, he wants the Pope to go back to Guatemala for Christmas with him. And the Pope agrees to it.
Until?
Yeah, until...
Until he doesn't, which is kind of, like... What's cool about that scene before we get the payoff of the end is this idea that we see everyone around him suddenly be like, oh, okay, we see that you're not being mean or vindictive anymore. Like, because if we, I think if we go back and watch the entire series, every time we see something where we're like suspect in the moment, we're like, why would you do this? That's so rude.
Right.
It always has like this outcome. And to see actively within that world, people start believing and understanding, be like, well, I'm upset about it, but I get it. Right. Okay.
And peep this. All of his actions, which we all found so heinous or reprehensible or just abrasive, they worked. You got to give it to him. He played a hell of a chess game, and he came up, as the king.
It's really cool to be inside of a young king story. We've compared this to regencies before. And this idea of frequently when a young person takes over, there's all speculation of like they're gonna mess it up. They have no idea what they're getting into. They have zero allegiances, and to be put in a position where you're one of those people, where the whole time we're watching this guy, we're like, "There's no way he's gonna succeed. He's gonna tear the whole thing down." And then to become a believer within really the last three episodes, be like, "We did the right thing. He's smart. He should be." It's been a really powerful exchange in the last three episodes that, like the first five, I was just not expecting at all.
Right.
It was all ordained.
Yeah. So actually, was it this same cardinal where they talk about his parents? He talks about his parents, and he said, "How do you know they're not dead? Why don't you get in touch with them? Maybe they have a guilty conscience because you're like the Pope. They were hippies." And he talks about, I believe it's this cardinal, but I might be wrong. They talk about how different he must be from his parents because he says you're the worldwide champion of ideas that are completely counter to theirs.
Right.
Saying he's so conservative.
Which happens
and they
a lot
so
of times,
liberal.
Too. Like, when parents will be one way and the kid will just, like, go the opposite way.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting to think about because I didn't, for whatever reason, think about that all this time.
Yeah, maybe that could be his way of, like, okay, because they left me, his defense mechanism could be I'm going
to,
reject their sensibility.
Yeah.
But, and then along that, we're in the scene right now where he's addressing the crowd, right? Mm-hmm. He's finally coming out. He's seen it on TV all over the world. And the cardinal who was referencing his parents, we follow the camera.
Yeah.
The Pope's point of view, he's looking in. And remember when we saw the other fake parents come in, I was just like, not only are these the wrong people, they don't even look remotely like the people. But then we see the old hippie couple. You guys, was that real or not real?
I choose to believe it's real.
What do you think?
I mean, it makes sense because, like, okay, this is our son. We may have left him, but I think the hippie parents, they were like, well, this is a part of, like, the universe's plan. And guess what it was? Because he would have never been a pope had they just raised him as a normal kid.
That's how I've always felt. Yeah. Like, his father looks a lot like stereotypical Jesus.
Yeah.
Looks, and I always got this feeling that because he's, like, ordaining, like miracles and all these other things, I was just feeling like maybe they gave you up at such a late age because they were like, this is your, like,
that's
God told us
wow.
that you needed to be with Mary in order to get where you need to go. Because there's no, like, hate. There's no, like, animosity.
Yeah.
And then to see them here again, especially after he has said himself, like, I'm no longer looking for my parents. I'm over it. I've become a man. Like I said, I've, buried one parent. I'm sending the other one away. To see them now, it really feels like, Spencer's prediction is coming true. He's like, they're alive, and you're going to see them again.
Yes.
And it's not going to be what you think it is. It's just going to be a very brief, and it honestly feels like a gift from God that he's kind of been waiting for his whole life. Mm. Like, now you get it. Now you're where you're supposed to be. Now you can see your parents.
And guess what? Right after he gets that gift, what does he see? Can we say it? Are we there yet? Can we say it?
Yeah, no, you can go
okay,
for it.
Okay, spoiler alert. This is at the very end of the show.
Spoiler alert.
I love it. Thanks, Booth.
Exactly. So he after spotting his parents with the little telescope, the little handy-dandy scope, he's obviously, he's filled with emotion. He wraps up the speech, and he passes out. Or he seems he's in the midst of passing out.
Right.
And the one thing that he's been struggling with the whole time is his belief in God. You know, we talked about this to death, but to some people it was corny, but right before he passes out, what does he look and see? He sees Jesus in the sky, in the clouds.
Yeah, so it was, I thought it was a really good finale. So, you know, he goes back to Venice and he gives his first, like, speech out in public at San Marco Square in Venice. And just like you guys talked about, like, well, first he speaks about Juana. And tells
a
story.
Big part of it.
Yeah, tells a story about her. And we see all these flashes of, like, people watching the speech. We see, you know, the drug lord that killed Andrew and his wife, the lady who was in bed who became friends with Gutierrez, the prime ministers, the author, Freddie, Kurtwell, the cardinals, everybody. Everybody
the
that was
the prostitute
that
we saw
for
one episode way back when was a really powerful cutback. And then the woman who we assume the letters were for.
Oh, yes.
She was watching with her kids.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, this is amazing. Like, way to wrap all these stories up and bring them, like, back to a central focus right at the end. It's beautiful.
No, I'm so glad you said that because there's so many times throughout the season where I'm like, what the hell was the purpose of this person? Or, like, how are we just going to leave them and we're not going to see what happens? And I'm not saying, like, we know what happens with them, but, you know, it was good that they wrapped it up and we could see them now watching the Pope give this speech.
And, okay, is it a wrap-up or is it not a wrap-up? This show was originally intended to be a limited run.
Mm-hmm.
We know 10 episodes.
Right.
Fake news, real news, I don't know, people, the Hollywood Reporter. The Young Pope producers confirm second season of show.
Really?
So the ironic part about it is he has his death or near-death experience, whatever you want to call it. I think I know what it is. I kind of like teased it out earlier.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting that all these episodes were kind of written in a bottle, in a vacuum, before they knew they'd be renewed. And so this is kind of like the real deal, I think, of what he, you know, what
it's
he would
be really
ended up
interesting
with.
To come back after the end.
No, so
like, that's such a hard thing to come back from. Like, and it's cool because they have this rock star, like, persona around, and now, like, he's performing miracles and passing out in front of crowds. So the way you could start, like, there's an endless number of ways to do it, and most of them are, like, with a giant bang, which I'm hoping is what they do.
Right.
There's potential. I'm excited about it, but you've sent so much of your cast away. Like, it concerns me that there is a second season, but I'm excited to see what they do
so
with
do
it.
You believe that there is a second season?
I'll tell you, and here's why, because the numbers started going up and it started to become more critically acclaimed. Mm-hmm. I forget where I read it, but like the ratings were somewhere between that FX show Taboo, which is really kind of cool but really niche. It's kind of above there and like a little bit below Westworld.
Okay,
so HBO likes the show.
Yeah.
And I think they see dollar signs in there, but more importantly, you know, the Pope has to finish his story, man. He's been through so many miracles, and guess what? He has to get resurrected like Jesus. I think the Pope is coming back. That's my prediction.
What do you think, Joel? Do you think he's coming back?
I think it'd be weird if they continue the show without him, so he'll for sure be back.
But do you think it's going to be a second season?
Well, I mean, if it's on the Hollywood... Like, the Hollywood Reporter's not going to print producers confirm unless it's been confirmed. So, it seems like we're strapping in for a second season.
Nowadays, in Trump's America, you don't know what publications you can believe. But yeah, so it's so crazy because we talked about this last episode. Al reported that they were going to do a season two, but then when it said the end, I'm like, how are they going to have a season two after the end?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't think that he died when I saw it.
I didn't either.
I was like, dude's like having a heart murmur or something. He's like, but this is him finally feeling close to God, and that's what this giant pullout is we're going to God's home, essentially, and watching from God's perspective.
Oh, yeah, God's eye view. Yeah, pulling out.
Good,
I love that
point.
Shot, by the way, going
I
all the way from space.
I love that shot, too.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
It hit me as a little corny.
Was it?
It did.
She's not sentimental.
It did. It hit me as a little... I'm really not.
I was like, man, this is cool. Yeah, I like this. But I never thought about it like that.
God's point of view.
But I did not think that he died. Like, I was like... This guy's, like, so overwhelmed with whatever you feel when you're super spiritual and you're just having, like, a moment, and he's just, like, has fallen over. And I felt like that's the same thing that happened with Sister Mary. I don't know what the hell happened with Esther. Like, trust fall. I don't know. But, like, I think Sister Mary, he was literally, like, physically feeling like, oh, my God, she's leaving, like, heartbreak, whatever. And then this moment, he was just, like, overwhelmed with
whether it's a heart
it
murmur or a panic attack or a psychosomatic, you know what I mean? To me, it's the perfect cliffhanger.
It is. So it was interesting because one thing that I thought was really cute is earlier in the episode, Gutierrez gives him a telescope and he says, you know, it's not worth anything, but I thought of you. And so he pulls it out after he tells everybody in the crowd to smile because everybody's cheering. He says, smile, like, I want to see you guys. And he does his telescope and he's looking. And that's when he sees who we think are his parents, which is interesting because I automatically assumed it was his parents. I'm like, that's his parents. This is incredible. And then I watched afterwards And the writers were saying, we're leaving it a mystery. It's up to you to believe.
Which I like.
What? I don't like it.
You want to see everything tied up in a nice
neat
bow?
Can you just tell me what the hell is going on? I don't want to be wondering the rest of my life about this.
I can meet you halfway in there because I think people had so many problems with that show Lost. Like, so many things didn't were left untold. I think the show hit the balance right in that they wrapped up a lot and they left a couple of things dangling, which made you want to tune in more because you can't tell everything.
Like Tonino, yeah. Is that his parents?
Exactly. So, you know, I think there's enough there to make you want to tune in, but they wrapped that everything up nicely when they took care of, you know, Sister Mary's going to Africa.
Yes.
They send the Pope a committed molestation. They send him away. They banish him. He's back friends with Tommaso. Gutierrez admits that he comes out as gay. Like, everything came out in this one.
Yeah. So, you know, he sees Jesus, the end, we're here. End of the 10th episode. Mm-hmm. Don't stab yourself. See, God works in mysterious ways. He somehow had that thing wrapped up completely, and it's shattered. So that's interesting. But what did you guys ultimately think of the season?
I liked it. I think it was a slow burn.
Yeah.
But it wound up paying off. The performances with all HBO things are exceptional.
Yes.
And it was beautiful to look at. I'm excited to see how they continue the story.
Yes.
Especially as we know our popes can be crazy and out of hand at times. So I'll be looking forward to see what kind of obstacles he faces next. Because it's like, he gutted the church of, like, the filth. Like, the stuff he could control. But I feel like as they tackle the second season, it should be like, what outside forces can't he... Like, the stuff he did
with
the Prime Minister
were
so exciting.
Yeah, and they're setting that up, too.
I would love to see some of that in season two.
Yeah, you know, I totally agree. And I agree with you, too, with, like, it was a slow burn. Because, like, at first, it was just like, where are we going with this? Right. And then all of a sudden, towards the end, I was like, they're not going to be able to wrap this up this soon. It kind of reminded me of Boardwalk Empire. Mm-hmm. Because Boardwalk Empire was pretty slow for me at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then it started getting crazy. And I always felt like... Same thing with that show. Like, they waited till the last couple episodes.
I agree with pretty much everything you said as far as the pacing. And that's how a lot of my friends have to sell them on. It's like, no, just hang in there. It's quirky, you know. But you got to invest in it.
Yes.
And it's a slow burn. But, man, to me, episodes 8 and 9, those were bonkers.
Oh, yes.
Episode 9 was the climax to me. And emblematic of where this show can take you. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk about the filmmaker, too, just because I think I said to you last time how much I love... Paolo Sorrentino's style.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, he's the shit. Okay,
yeah.
We were talking about a couple of shots that we liked earlier. Let's describe them. I don't know if you remember when Voiello is waiting in, either he's waiting in Esther's room or he summons Esther.
Mm-hmm.
That must be his room because he summons her where he plays pool.
Yeah.
So he's trying to get Esther to blackmail the young Pope.
Yeah.
He kind of dangles this out there. He walks away to another room, which you can barely see, maybe like echoes of a pool table.
Yes.
You know, you hear it, you're wondering.
Yes.
And then he comes back.
Were you here when we were talking about that?
I was not.
Oh,
I
my
saw
God.
The exact,
yes.
Not the exact same shot, but true filmmakers study other masters.
Yes.
And, you know, Roman Polanski, before the scandal, one of his critical films, Rosemary's Baby,
uh-huh.
Exact same frame.
Really?
I'm big on frames, like I'm big on the frame and the...
Do you know, there's this weird scene.
Yeah, exactly what he's talking
where
about.
Where Voiello
yeah.
leaves in the middle of it and just like shoots pool and comes back. It's like, what the hell's going on?
And in the other scene, I forget the actress who plays the mother in Rosemary's Baby will come to me. She's married to Woody Allen.
Oh my goodness.
But the point is, she's on the phone whispering like, and you're like, what's going on? And all you can do as an audience member is go like this. And lean over.
Yeah.
As the picture is kind of like tracked away.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love that. I love when film takes you there.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I think everything about this show, like, everything was just so beautifully done. Like, every scene could have been, like, a picture that was just, like, fully photoshopped and beautiful. Like, I loved everything visually about it.
I got to find out who the cinematographer is. Anybody know? But, I mean, when you talk about painting with light... Like, that's what he did. I'll find out his name.
Yeah, the oil painting style things, especially when we have, like, the large gatherings with the ornate clothing.
Yes.
And then these kind of very posed, slow images. It's breathtaking.
So, finishing up the series, I mean, are you guys on the Pope's side? Have we always been on the Pope's side?
I feel like I definitely wasn't at the beginning. I was like, who is this young chap coming in here? I really thought there was going to be some mafia-style conspiracy.
Yes.
I really thought we were going to deal with, like, in a more... laissez-faire is not the right word, but, like, this... without... I thought it would be more, like, cover-ups. I thought there would be more scandal and more cover-ups.
Sure.
I thought that was the direction we were going. And so... I forgot who told us, but someone had watched the series prior to it airing in the U.S. and was like, you guys are so off on your predictions. I can't even wait for you to watch it.
I think it was Nick. I think it was one of our followers, Nick.
Thank you, Nick. It was totally that. It was totally a 180, and I think it's rare for a show to do that.
Yeah.
And so this ranks high on my list in new shows this season. It was just early in the year, guys.
Yeah.
This season, because what show does that to you? Everybody kind of gives you the premise and then takes you through it, and sometimes there'll be twists in plot, but there's rarely a twist in how you feel about people.
Right.
And that was really well executed.
I liked the way they plotted out all the episodes. Again, Lenny's arc to me is like what a good character is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you take a character who comes in kind of broken, kind of an asshole, and really still questioning like whether he's up for the job or even believes in God, and you take him on this journey of faith, through this hero's journey. But what was the thing I was going to say that I was referring back to one of the episodes. Anyway, I'll get back to you later.
Yeah, when you're thinking, while you are thinking about that, what did you guys think of Jude Law playing this character?
I thought he did a fabulous job. Like, Jude Law is never bad.
Yeah.
Like, there's never been a moment where you're like, oh, Jude Law. It's always like, oh, hey, it's Jude Law. It's exciting.
Yeah.
I thought he did every, like, facet and angle of his character. He hit really well.
Yes, I agree.
His performance drew me in. I know there's really nothing bad to say about it. It was a solid performance.
And a solid cast, too. You know, James Cromwell, Diane Keaton, you know, and a lot of, like, new people we've never seen before.
No, I thought the casting was great, and I just think Jude Law did such an amazing job with this role.
And
so
another actor could have totally made different choices.
Mm-hmm.
I like that he had the courage to kind of take it, like, slightly over the top. I like that. Because the character's over the top.
Yes. Yeah. Well, anything else before we wrap up for tonight that you guys want to mention before we sign off air for our final after show for the Young Pope?
Looking forward to seeing what they're doing with season two.
Yeah. Anything else for you, Al?
Your question was, were we down with the Young Pope? Were we rooting for him? I was rooting for him from day one, even though he was a jerk, because I'm always kind of more intrigued by the anti-hero, you know?
Yes.
Any other, if he had been like a perfect Pope, you know, it wouldn't have been as interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, guys. Make sure you like our video, comment to us, because I want to talk more Young Pope, even though we are wrapping things up here. Make sure you subscribe to AfterBuzz TV on YouTube. And thank you so much all season for chatting with us, for commenting. We really appreciate it. We love all the Twitter feedback and everything. Definitely still write to us, because I want to talk more Young Pope. So until next time, I'm Jesse Zahner, and you can find me on all social media at Athletic, and tell everybody where they can find you guys.
Hey everybody, I'm Al Gregg, aka Young Papal, aka Al G. I tried to simulate my little Pope collar.
Yeah.
We were dressing like in black and white.
Exactly.
But you can find me on Instagram, Al G_JamaicaHouseFilm. Follow me on Twitter at SoundClassCine. On later tonight, Jess and I are taping a show for The Good Fight in a couple of hours, so come back then if you're still around.
Yes.
Cool. I'm Joelle Monique. You can find me all over the internet at Joelle Monique. Every week at Black Girl Nerds. Tonight, 10 o'clock, we're doing Supergirl. Wednesdays, The Magicians. Stay with it, because it's amazing. And of course, on Book Circle, every Wednesday, 6 p.m., where we break down a new comic book for you.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you later.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.